Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Rocket Mortgage. Confidence. Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Why can't clients get approved in minutes, not weeks? Or make adjustments to their rate and term in real time? Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans answered those questions and more. It gives you the confidence to buy a home or refinance your existing loan. Fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. That's right. That's what Rocket Mortgage does. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. What else do you need to know? And again, these guys support the show and are great sponsors. So, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. To get started, just go to rocketmortgage.com/Adam. That's rocketmortgage.com/Adam.
Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Dennis Prager, with Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects. And now, he too would conduct a symphony orchestra, but only if they played the theme to Taboo 2. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. That's what we rely on. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian.
You've dropped me.
Accusations. That's flying.
That's a little Sonny Carolla over there.
They get real chatty when the mics get fired up.
Oh, my God.
Sing like
it
birds.
It is lounge central over at my house.
You've dropped me.
Yeah. But I can't quit you, boy. All right. Let's see. So Dennis Prager's going to call in toward the end of the program. He
Embroiled in controversy.
Last minute. Situation. Mike got him on the phone. Blah, blah, blah. All right. So let me explain to everybody what's going on from the view of a human being who is insanely grounded and sees everything exactly as it is.
All right. What do you want to know? Let's talk.
I'm the last human being alive who sees everything exactly for what it is, and I'm so tired of everybody, well, that's your opinion. Okay, we'll agree to disagree. I don't argue about things I don't know about, and I do convey things exactly as I've heard them, exactly as I've known them. If you tell me the theater I played held 1,175 people, I will almost never say 1,500 people. I will just say the number that was told to me. So I can tell you exactly how this whole debacle is unwound, and then I can tell him, we'll play you some clips, and we'll talk to Dennis as well. And then I'll tell you a few insights I have as well. First things first, I wish this Alexa thing would be like, I feel like we're smart, but we're not that smart. We're at the beginning of everything, but we're not that smart. And I'll give you an example. I wish Alexa had some memory, and maybe it does, but not for me, it doesn't, which is this. I get up in the morning. So Dennis Prager is on, as you guys know, I hope you know, I'm a huge fan of AM talk radio. I've always been a huge fan of AM talk radio. And
tell me about that, Grandpa Carolla.
It was my only company. When you are wired, like I'm wired, and you're forced to do jobs where you just sort of walk around alone all day, like you will start talking to yourself and start climbing the walls. You guys, you take for granted the workplace. It's weird to work with no workplace.
Right.
Your workplace is a shovel, mm-hmm. or your workplace is take your truck, go over there, get those cinder blocks, load them up in your truck, and then bring them over here. But you don't work with anybody.
That's where you are for the day or the week.
Yeah, coworker camaraderie.
No, there's no fantasy football leagues and no someone's
no
making
break room.
No, I mean, when it gets really bad, I used to work, for instance, I was working up in the hills of Simi Valley in like an avocado orchard, and they built a house up there. And you just be up there alone just all day, and you better pack a lunch because there's nothing nearby, and you just sort of sit with your own feelings all day long. And I think for some people, a lot of carpenters, like there was a lot of guys I worked with who just sort of wanted to be left alone. Like they sort of liked it, but not me. I wanted to talk to somebody, bounce some ideas off someone, write a joke, you know, do something. I wanted to constantly be caught up in some kind of conversation.
Right.
You know, so.
With the other raconteurs who are digging dishes.
Yeah. Balthazar. Jesus Christ. Could those guys not? Like the Mexican guys could barely talk, and the white guys really couldn't talk at all. Like those are the guys you're dealing with. But it's still just every once in a while, like the greatest joy would be if they teamed you up or if there was a cool guy and he was there. And once in a blue moon, you'd get some guy. There's a guy named like Gareth who had a college degree and was just making some money before blah, 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 blah. And we could talk about ideas and he was smart and he was funny. I could crack him up. And, you know, the day would just blow by. I guess it'd be like driving a truck with no radio and nobody riding shotgun. Like that's how that kind of work is. So I'd bring along my radio and I would listen to Michael Jackson, the South African talk show host, in the
Michael
morning.
Jackson.
I would listen to Dr. David Viscott,
the king of talk,
in the afternoon. He'd come on. He was the therapist.
Oh yeah, didn't we watch a video of him?
Yeah, he had like a syndicated late night TV show for a while.
That
he
was
wore
creepy.
Sweaters and he'd be like, "My friend," and someone would go. It was always so funny because they'd go, "Hi, Dr. David. I've been married for 13 years. Hold on. What was that? 13 years? No, before that, my friend.
I said,
married.
Hello?
I've been married. Hello. Yeah, my friend. Stop. Hold on. Go back. What was that? Go back." Go from before I called? No, yes, go back. Go back to being inside the car before you walked into the house. My friend, you can't form an opinion on somebody if they're just calling into a show. So I want you to stop and go back and think about that. And they'd go, I don't know what you're asking. Just think about it. Just think about it. All right, next call.
He was subtly invalidating the whole reason for him being on the TV.
Yeah, like, stop. Go
he
back.
Can't be helped over the telephone call.
So he'd do it on the radio.
Call-in show.
He'd do it. I'd
what
listen
kind of
to him.
Calling a show like this. Next.
I'd listen to Prager at night. I'd listen to the Bible Answer Man during the day. And all things I really had not a ton of interest in other than it was a voice. It was talking. It was sort of like turning the radio on for a pet.
Yeah.
When you leave, some people
just
do
something.
That.
And something with
something.
A point of view.
Yeah,
you know,
point
not
of view,
just,
Pat,
white noise.
Anything. Yeah, point of view. And I thought these guys were skilled. Like, I was like, they're so composed. I remember thinking, how is it that Michael Jackson never goes like, what?
Hold on.
Just spoke like he was reading out of a teleprompter the entire time doing all these interviews and all this kind of stuff. I was very impressed. But anyway. So I was on to Dennis Prager a long, long time ago. And so I get up in the morning and I head into my office and I tell Alexa, I have three commands. I have either play.
Alex A.
Play classical music or play the Jayhawks, which they'll just play every Jayhawk song, or I'll say play 870 The Answer. That's the AM station that Prager's on out here. I've done this ritual for almost a year. It's AM 870 The Answer, or I just say 870 The Answer. This morning, I said play 870 The Answer, and this is what I got.
Dennis needs to fix his intro music.
New format.
Except for it was the middle of this song, so and it, the volume was all the way up, so it was...
Small heart attack?
Yeah.
Feel like you're at Home Depot? Right.
Now, it's weird with Alexa, because you go... This is Kenny Lan...
Well, this is the Kenny Larkin mix of Pump the Move.
I wish it was the Kenny Loggins mix.
It's so weird because you go, play 870 The Answer. Playing Pump the Move by Kenny Larkin. Like, wow, did that not sound at all like what I said? And then also, Alexa, you're smart. I've never played this ever. But the other one I've called for 1,100 times. So what are the chances?
Yeah, it doesn't have any sort of history.
Gary will tell us, because he knows all,
Brian,
but it can't have any historical anything. It's not knowing what you're...
Are you...
Take it, Sonny.
Okay. Are you kidding me? Okay. Are you kidding... Okay. Are you... Okay. Are you... Okay. Are you kidding me?
You get down with this.
Yeah. I was trying to think, like, what is the opposite of Dennis Prager?
Yeah.
And then what is the opposite of anything I ever want to hear in the AM?
They found it.
Yeah. All right. So I just thought that was funny. So Dennis will call in. So here's the whole thing in a nutshell. First things first. If you would like to look for quotes of me saying horrible things, you can find plenty of those quotes of me saying horrible things, but let's...
Or just listen every day.
or tune in. That's it. But you also, if you look at it within things within a context, for instance, one of my more horrible quotes that people would probably cite or reasons why some folks might be pissed at me is saying women weren't funny. Okay. So let's just put that entire thing into context. I'm sitting in my office of my house in Hollywood Hills. I'm having a pretty long form interview with some guy from some newspaper in New York or some publication. He's asking me lots of questions about podcasting and radio and writing a book and comedy and cars and everything under the sun. And somewhere near the end, he says to me, who do you think's funnier, men or women? And I say, men are funnier, but Sarah Silverman's funnier than any of my friends I went to high school with, and funnier than me. Like I said, Kathy Griffin, Sarah Silverman, funnier. But God, if I pick one, picking guys. Now, the reason I answer that way always is because I believe when somebody asks you an A or B question, you can't go, everything's different or all the above or whatever. Yeah, they're asking.
Well, never making politics.
And they're asking for your opinion. Mm-hmm. That's why you can always give it. That's why you're being intellectually dishonest when you don't give it, because I don't have a magic wand. I can't. It's not. Well, Adam made the decree that men were funnier than women. Thus, women, you must put duct tape over your mouth and stuff. Oh, wait a minute. Let's put a hole in it. Oh, damn. Mm. All right. Yeah, I'm going to work this one out. Yeah. The point is this. My opinion affects nothing. It does not affect any sort of, I'm not a club owner. I don't own a string of radio stations or comedy clubs or anything of that nature. I can't do anything. You're simply asking me a question.
Independent performer.
Yeah. If you said to me, that's my opinion. I gave you an answer. Then they took it and ran with it. Then it turned into Adam thinks women aren't funny. And then it spun into like, what's he going to say to his daughter? I feel sorry for his daughter. I feel sorry for my daughter.
She's living a pretty good life.
Oh, you should see what I'm building her right now. Where's Gary? God, I got to show you this. She hit her Pinterest and she showed me a platform for her bed with drawers down below and a landing up top with her super shaggy carpet and her $1,300 egg chair from pre-pube teen or whatever. It's bed and crate teen
and
or whatever.
CB2, probably CB2.
Whatever it is. The point is now daddy is building her the platform for her to go up and put her bed on top and put her whatever up top. All right.
She's clearly neglected.
Still imagining pre-pube teen at the mall. For the last time, no, we don't have that here. Creep.
So, I get it. I get how it works, and then that's what you know. You know, Adam's the hate monger, doesn't think women should be allowed to do comedy, and I get it. Now, I have no idea why people have an interest in taking somebody's personality trait that doesn't exist, enhancing it, putting a couple zeros behind it, pumping it up with creatine, and then trotting it out. Like, I don't know what that is. I can't tell you the amount of times somebody, you know, Dr. Drew will sit here and go, I told the guy behind the counter I didn't have two forms ID, and he started screaming at me. He screamed in my face, and I'll just go, he didn't scream in your face. Like, he sounded agitated, but I don't. Why do we have to make this guy into a bad person?
You know what I mean? He was a centimeter away if he was an inch.
Yeah, like, I know Drew does that. I know people do stuff all the time where they say, "Oh, that guy did this on purpose. Oh, that guy cut you off." Oh, you know what I mean?
He's trying to get me.
I always kind of go, he probably wasn't paying attention. Like, this.
He knew what he was doing.
So I don't know, and I'm not sure where the enter. I get when you want to move some publications, like you want to get some clickbait or some eyeballs or something right. like that. I get that part. You have a. It's a business. You want to do a gotcha question. You want to take the question. You want to morph it into something that it really wasn't, and then you want to place it out there and see if you get a few clicks. I get it for business, but if you're not a business, what is that? Like, what's
the upside?
In it? What's in it for you? As I've always thought, all roads lead to narcissism. You get to play the role of a hero, even though you shouldn't be satiated by that. On this level, for what you're doing, it's just the story. It's not big enough. Meaning, Dennis Prager is a religious, family-oriented, hardworking guy who gets up, pays his taxes, goes to work, never harmed anybody.
Wait till they get a hold of that phrase.
done everything by the book, and is really one of the most decent guys I know. And nobody should have a problem with him. He has beliefs. He's a deeply religious Jew, so he has beliefs that you disagree with, but I disagree with them too. But that doesn't have no bearing in what kind of human being he is. He's out of all the people I've been exposed to, he's one of the most decent human beings I've ever met. He's jovial. He's in a good mood. He likes to laugh. He's fun. I brought him with me. I brought Sonny with me. As you know, Sonny was here yesterday. So I brought Sonny with me to his studio on my way. I was going to be a guest on his show yesterday, and then I
when
coming
everything
over
went
here.
So smoothly with the parking garage.
Right.
You got me.
So I brought Sonny, and I said, we're laughing. We're sitting, hanging around during the commercial, and he said, like, well, how did it feel speaking in front of Congress and everything? And I said, oh, I didn't even know how to make a tie. I'd have a guy come make my tie for me. That's how little I should be in front of Congress, or how far away I am from speaking in front of Congress. Now, Dennis wears a tie to work every day. That's the kind of guy he is. He does a radio show, but he puts a tie on because he believes you dress a certain way for work. And I think it's one of these things. I do think it's one of these things, and I do agree with this, even though I would never wear a tie to work. When you broadcast, I think it's a better idea to stand up. I'm sitting now. I got six podcasts
Damn
to do
right.
today. But you guys are on your feet. Your energy's better. The flow's better. You're awake. It's just better to stand. Like, I don't believe you should be in a recliner and do a podcast or broadcast of any kind. So if you can, my math is, if somebody said, how about you lay down and do a broadcast? You'd go, well, that's ridiculous. Well, if that's ridiculous, then standing up is the best. And sitting on a high stool, which I'm doing right now, is second best. Mm-hmm. But it'd be best to stand. And I believe that in a weird way, putting the tie on is the version of standing while you're riding. Sort of, it keeps, sure. It's like, I'm going to work. I'm going to shave. I'm going to shower. I'm going to put a tie on. I'm going to do all things I don't do. And I shall go to work because I am alive. I'm a human. That's I'm going to work.
It puts you in that mode.
Right. So that's
so
the kind of guy.
Like you are, ironically.
Yeah, please explain. Yes.
The guy that, everything for me with everybody, when they go, oh, you say family and educate, you say education, blah, 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 you don't even know how to read. That's right, bitch. I pay somebody to do it for me. All the caveats are, if you can go ahead and be a millionaire with your horrible golf swing, I don't have to coach you up.
Right.
Everyone else should get coaching from a golf pro. You have a horrible swing, but you're on the tour. I'm leaving you alone.
Right.
Rick Barry got made fun of for the underhanded free throws for about probably a month, and now he's in the Hall of Fame.
Right, because once he was at 97% with his underhanded free throws, then that's it.
And the joke stopped.
It wasn't so funny anymore.
That's a perfect example. That's not the way to shoot a free throw. For this guy,
it's in the hole.
It is.
It's in the hoop, sorry.
For that guy, it is. Back and that's me in my shorts. Okay. So, the kind of guy Prager is, I showed up with Sonny. I was laughing that I don't know how to make a tie. Sonny was probably having a laugh, too. And then Prager looked at Sonny and he said, "Do you know how to make a tie?" And Sonny said, "No, I do not." And he said, "Well, your dad can't teach you, but if you come to my home, I promise you, I will teach you how to make a tie." We live within a mile and a half of each other. And he said it's a joke, but then he said, "I'm serious. If you'd like to come over, I will be happy to teach you how to make a tie." He's that
sincere.
He's that kind of guy. Yeah. Like I'd make a joke and then I'd move on, but I wouldn't sort of insist that he come by and make a tie and think that would be kind of a fun or cool moment or whatever it is. So that's the kind of guy he is. He also has a deep love of classical music. He's a strange guy in that he was learning to speak Russian when he was, 15. He was living in Russia when he was 19. He was going and seeing classical. He was buying tickets for $1 because they had like student prices and going to see classical. He's doing everything you do not to get laid when you're in high school in the 60s or 70s and or whatever it is. Everything.
Conducting a phantom orchestra.
Everything. Yeah. Right. So.
He's like the brother in Slums of Beverly Hills.
In his underwear.
I have this thought. You guys tell me. It's going to sound elitist, but here goes. Maybe convenient because I love classical music as well, but I'm not as attracted to it as Dennis is. I think it's a marker for intelligence, right? I think most intelligent people are attracted to it, or they have an attraction or like a big film score. It moves them. Mm-hmm. It does something to them. And dumb people just want to hear Pump the Jam by Kenny Logan over there or whatever. Yeah. Like it is, it takes a couple of brains. I've not met any dumb people that love classical music. Like, first things first, I'm going to do both sides of the equation. I never meet dumb people who listen to classical music, who talk about classical music, who are playing
classical music.
I've never even jumped in a dumb guy's pickup truck and had it playing at any point ever. I've never heard it discussed. I've hung around dumb people my entire life. It's never come up with dumb people. So it seems like either zero or a weird secret that they all keep to secretly love classical music.
50-50 chance.
I, as a young person, would find myself just putting it on the classical station sometimes just to play while I was wrenching on the car or thinking. Like, I always found that the lyrics could be distracting when I was trying to form jokes or thoughts. Absolutely. Or something like that. So can we agree that dumb people don't like classical music? Yeah. And if they do, I've never seen any evidence of it.
Yeah, and they're complicated. It's complicated arrangements. So it's definitely lighting something up in your brain.
The Dawson... Yeah. Has a thought. I'm going to tease your thought for 1 second. I just want to get to Audible. Here's something you should be listening to. Stuck in traffic? Turn it into an adventure with Audible. Audible is giving my listeners a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audible.com/ace and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. My books are there. Dawson's got his voiced books there.
We got Mistrial up there. We got Left of Boom up there and a few others, yeah.
Yeah, also Shrinkage is up there as well. So check all that stuff out. Not a streaming or rental service. With Audible, you own the books. How about that? Access them anytime, anywhere from your smartphone. God, I wish I had these guys when I was doing construction back in the day. But, my friend, I wouldn't do such a bang-on impersonation of Fishcott. Turn walking the dog into something more with a free trial at Audible. So go to audible.com/ace. That's audible.com/ace and get the 30-day free trial. Dawson, thoughts on classical?
Classical is the best thing for getting through Los Angeles traffic. Started listening 10 years ago to KUSC. And it's all I listen to in traffic because it calms me down. But what I wanted to tell you is that have you ever heard Holst the Planets? That huge piece of classical music where he does a score for each planet, and it's about like 50 minutes long. It's the most amazing one piece of classical music I think you can ever hear. If people ask me where the starting point is, it's Holst's The Planets. It's being performed live by the LA Symphony Orchestra August 22nd at the Hollywood Bowl. I'm planning on going. If you would like to, I'll get you a ticket.
August 22nd. Then back from Monterey, in Monterey, 1927. Tuesday? Yeah, we'll work it out. Send me an email, as I'd like to hear that.
I will. Right. In fact, I forgot. I got a show in Santa Barbara that night, so I'll buy you two tickets.
Thank you.
And can I just add to that that my boyfriend's son, his youngest, is brilliant. He's a genius. It's comical. He just knows more than everyone I know put together. He just was born that way. But he's voracious about it, and he only wants to learn. He only wants to listen to classical music. He taught himself to play the piano. He's in Germany. He just taught himself German. And that's all he wants to talk about. And the passion behind it, I think, is what's telling. You have passion about it. Dawson has passion about it. And Tommy is very passionate about it.
Well, let's put it this way. If you like classical music, then it speaks to you. And since the voice doesn't change, it speaks to everyone, then you don't have the ears or the mm-hmm. receptors to ingest when it's being spoken to you, then you're dense. Because I don't think my dog likes classical music either. Then you're somewhere between my dog and Prager. You're between Philly cheesesteak and Prager.
Spectrum.
Yep.
Right. All right. I'll put this on hold for 1 second because someone's on the line from Russia, and I just want to jump to him, and then I'll get back to this. Sorry. Scott, 41, Russia.
Yeah. Hi, Ace Man. Hi, Gina. Hi, Brian.
Hey.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Where are you calling from in Russia?
I'm in a nice suburb just outside of Moscow.
What do you guys think about all the Russia talk over here?
I think people are perplexed by it here. People don't know what to make of it. And I think that the Russian government, it's kind of crazy because Trump has earned a lot of points here, kind of just like by not kind of backing down, I guess, completely over Russia, although he's starting to kind of lose some of his luster lately.
When you say scored points, what is that? Tell me if this is what that means. I believe there's certain governments, like, I don't think you're going to score points with Trudeau over in Canada, but there are other folks that strength or perceived strength impresses them.
Sure.
You know, and I think Putin might be that kind of guy. Like, I don't think Jimmy Carter, the modern day version of Jimmy Carter, would command any respect from Putin.
Sure. How many Habitats for Humanity are you willing to
yeah.
Wasn't it the Iranians who...
Hold
on a second there, Scott. Didn't the Iranians like let go of the hostages like the day Reagan was...
Yes.
Not inducted.
Well, it's close enough. Yeah.
The day after or something like that, because he was representing a much more powerful stance, whereas, you know, for Carter, they were like, please.
Yeah, but I'm confused what Scott said. He said they earned points here and points for not backing down.
Well, let's try to figure out. So, is what we said ring true at all?
Well, yeah, I think that the whole struggle with Congress has earned him points here, is what I meant.
Not backing down with our own
government. Able to kind of,
oh, okay.
Well, they're able to kind of play it as, you know, there is some kind of constituency that does want to make friends with Russia and that, you know, potentially there's a, you know, Congress that doesn't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of talking about the internal struggle in the United States, which is like a big, I mean, and there was even a point not too long ago that it was rumored that Putin even instructed the Russian state media to lay off of, you know, kind of saying Trump was great because he started to get more mentions in the media than Putin did.
Oh, interesting. So what's an average story like today for you? I mean, when you open the newspaper, is there some... How close to the front page is Trump?
He's on the front page every day.
Every day. Wow.
I assume complimentary, leans towards a positive vibe.
Well, it depends. I mean, because here there's a very big difference between the TV, which is totally censored, and like the newspapers and the internet, which totally aren't censored.
Mm-hmm. So no, so it's like state-run TV, but what do you have, Pravda?
Well, no, I mean, there's all sorts of stuff on the internet, and there's tons of different newspapers, but the idea is that, like, what the Russian government figures is that, like, kind of the, I guess we'd call it, like, the equivalent of the Trump voter watches TV and doesn't really read the internet or newspapers. Mm. And so they care about that guy, who is just sitting in front of the boob tube after work and, you know, having his beer, his vodka, or whatever. And the guy who actually logged on the internet.
Yeah. And by the way, the average Trump fan can't read Russian. Okay, yeah. Smarty?
We got your subtext there, Scott.
So, Scott, what are you doing over there, and why is your English so good?
Well, I'm an American, and I've been here for 10 years. I'm a business consultant.
Oh, because you have a little Russian finish to your voice, yeah. Which sounds like you just do really great English and speak Russian. But do you?
Really?
Yes.
No, I'm from California.
You got a little Russian?
It sounds like his old Russian has bled in over the years.
Mm-hmm. You're losing your American accent,
Scott.
That's
really surprising.
Yeah, a little. Just a little. Well,
that's surprising. Well, why? Because,
look, move to Sacramento. Yeah, well, all right, but move to Harlem and see how that affects things. Like, you can't not do it. You know, wherever no one's blaming you. You can't live somewhere for a decade and not have some of that.
I have a college friend from Texas who married an Australian guy and moved there, and she has a little bit of an Australian accent.
Oh, she's just putting on airs.
Or she's lived there for 12 years.
So anyway.
Well, I speak Russian. I spoke Russian before I got here. There's actually one thing I wanted to mention to you, and I think, you know, like, you've talked for years, Adam, about, well, like, stuff like, you know, kind of the petty things that there's actually some pluses to living in Russia. There's some things I think that United States, you know, like that you don't experience in United States, especially in California, that you do in Russia. And one is
freedom.
You know, I have a place in Florida. Well, there you go. But I have a place in Florida, and like I was driving to the Fort Lauderdale airport, and there's a bunch of these little towns between Miami Beach and Fort Lauderdale, where, like, you know, it's just basically a speed trap, and you drive through there, and they stop you, and they give you a ticket.
Right.
And I was in a hurry, and you know, they stopped me, and like you said before, like, basically, like, they treated me. I'm driving a rental car, you know, like a Hyundai or something, and I'm with my family, and they just, you know, like the cop was such a jerk, you know, and he just basically treated us all like, you know, we were Al Qaeda or something.
Well, listen, and, look, I don't want to stereotype, but black drivers are treated differently than others, and
well,
obviously with the, we can hear the accent
as
well.
Yeah, we can hear the affect.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Right, so, yeah, they're douchey. How, in Russia, can you...
But here, what's funny is that they salute you when they stop you.
Wow.
Can you bribe them?
You can, but if you're an American, it's hard to do that. Usually they just let you go because they just don't know what to do with you. They figure that, like, they don't know how to play that out because, like, with a Russian person, you know, they basically invite you into their car and then you sit there and they have a chat with you and everything. But if you're an American and you show them your American driver's license and, like, you know, they see that you're a foreigner, they kind of go, just get out of here.
Right.
Kind of like the guy selling the flowers on the side of the road.
You know, the dance.
So now you just have to get your Russian ID for when you get pulled over in Florida, and you speak in Russian.
Good.
And you show him that ID,
and
that guy's going to get confused and just tell you to beat it, too. You see what I'm saying?
Well, you know, I haven't gotten that far yet.
All right, so, Scott,
There's not a lot of Americans who want to get a Russian ID.
Is there anything I'm missing in this conversation, or are we cool?
I think we're very cool, and it was very good to talk to you.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it.
Adam, you know what you might have been picking up on with the sort of lilt you're referring to? I could be wrong, but in linguistics class in college, we did a lot of stuff about mouth placement. Russians speak in the back of the mouth. Americans speak in the middle of the mouth. So he might have just picked up that placement over the
we
years.
We get it. You went to college.
I was trying to figure out what it was. I couldn't stop hearing it. I think that might be it.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Yeah. That's all I know.
Oh, we got someone who can top the Jimmy Kimmel coffee can fart story. Oh, my God. All right, let me just finish up with Dennis. So, Dennis is a very decent guy who's a very deeply religious guy. And he's a very... he's a very liberal guy, but he's not a leftist guy. He's very liberal about all his thoughts, but he's not leftist about his thoughts. And if you ask him to define that or give you a good example, he'll always tell you the liberal belief as it pertains to race is who cares? Everyone's something. And now we should all just go out and try to get a job or do whatever we're going to do. I don't want to break it up. I don't need colleges or jobs or anything to be broken down in terms of race. It's not important. We're all just human beings. And left wants to know how many people are of what. I mean, it's so weird when you see these guys interviewed. They go, well, yeah, Berkeley is 31% Asian. Right. The community is only 7%. Yeah. That's problematic. It's problematic to whom? Like, can we concede that maybe they may be focusing a little more on high school, out of high school into college, like they were when I was goofing off in high school with Ray and Chris and Cynthia Nagatani was going to UCLA or Berkeley? Or do, what should we have done? Right. Sorry, Cynthia, you're not going. Old offer up front. Yeah, bring your poop bucket. You're going to Cal.
But I have straight A's.
The idea that it is sort of addressed is problematic.
Right.
It's not problematic. It tells me that the Asians are doing something right. Mm-hmm. And if we would like to go to Cal, then other folks may want to get their shit together.
Yep.
That's the way I look at it. And I certainly don't think of Cal. Do you think they're racist? I mean, what is Cal Berkeley's excuse for letting in too many Asians then? Mm. They're the most progressive people on the planet.
Too many.
Tip the progressive.
They do well on the SATs. They do well in their GPAs, and thus they get in. Now we have to start discriminating against them in order to get other folks in.
Same thing happened at UCLA.
That's left thinking. Liberal thinking is knock yourself out, go to college, and go to trade school, and God's honest, if Cal is 88% Asian, that's fine with me. It just is. Other people are going to have to work harder or not go to Cal or transfer to UCLA or whatever it is. Not interested. But Dennis is very interested in classical music, and he was been talking about conducting the Santa Monica Philharmonic, I think at the Walt Disney Center or something like that, auditorium. Gary will figure it out.
Big deal.
It's a big deal, and he loves it. It's a big deal for him. So for me, going and racing a car at Monterey is a big deal, and for him, going and conducting is a big deal. And he's excited about it.
You guys should switch.
He's never at Disney Hall. Yeah. He's never said anything other than he's excited about going and doing the piece that he's doing. So a couple of folks who I guess are more left than liberal, who are in the Philharmonic and professors at UCLA, have decided to boycott and encouraged all of their folks in the orchestra not to play for Dennis Prager, who's conducting. So a letter was circulated amongst the orchestra saying, don't show up, don't play, and tell your friends not to show up to the event. Dennis then wrote a piece that addressed that, saying, can a conservative conduct an orchestra? Now, it's the Santa Monica Orchestra, so it's one of the most progressive orchestras on the planet. The guy came back to Dennis and said, you turn this whole thing political, and that's why we're sitting out. Turning it political was a response to him sitting out. Not there was no politics whatsoever before the guy said we're going to protest.
Right. I assume that was the grounds in which they protested. They disagreed with him. I assume
they disagreed with him, but he was not making something political. He was there to conduct and go home and not make any statements politically. I think if I was trying to make the argument for the professor who was boycotting, they were trying to sell tickets. They have trouble raising funds. And they were trying to sell tickets, and they were trying to use this person that had an audience, meaning Dennis Prager. His audience likes classical music. They like him. So they were trying to sell some tickets on his back, in other words.
Okay.
The professor said, I don't want any of your ill-gotten gain. Okay. Basically, I disagree with you and your audience and your hate speak, so I'm sitting this one out. So he's sort of saying you made this political before it was political by agreeing to do this, but the professor made it political by saying we're going to sit this out.
Right.
Dennis replied to that, and then the guy accused him of making it political. It's all weird that these are adults.
Yeah, that's my, yeah.
These are like a 57-year-old adult, and also this guy is instructing your kids.
Mm-hmm.
it was frightening to hear what this guy sounded like. First, he did this, and you guys tell me. All right. Aha! Tell me if you guys can dig what I'm putting down here. There was a point where Dennis invited him on the show, and he said, just explain to me, I will give you all the mic time you want. Give me examples as to why I'm a hate-filled bigot. What do you got? You got
I got a few here.
Okay, we'll play a few clips.
Well, you got any order you prefer there?
Well, beginning the open letter, I guess, that he signed, I guess would be probably be good.
Okay, when you write in your first open letter I have here, please urge your friends not to attend the concert. And then you're telling my audience that you in no way have worked to stop the concert. Protesting outside doesn't stop the concert. Telling people not to go to the concert stops the concert.
No, you can still play with an empty hall if you want to.
Okay,
hold on. Do you want that guy teaching your kids? Do you want that brain? Do you want that mind imparting wisdom to your children? Like, I don't want that guy teaching my kids about anything because I don't trust his perspective. His thing is like, I didn't say they should shut down the concert. I said don't show up and that the band members shouldn't play. But I no way implied. And then he said a piece that we don't have, but it was, he said, protesting in front of the concert is how you shut the concert down. And Dennis said, no, it's not. You can come into the concert and have protesters out front telling musicians not to play is how you shut the concert down. That is this guy's logic. And he is a professor at UCLA, everybody. And he's 50. I don't know. How old is he?
You were right. Seven.
He's 50. I just guessed. But he's 57 years old. And this is his accumulated knowledge, and this is how he would discuss these topics around. Okay, so
this is so smug and juvenile.
It's also frustrating when you have a discussion or an argument or a debate with someone on reality's terms.
Yeah. No one's stopping you from standing there alone.
When they're being obstinate, like, well, you could just do it. Like, well, no, okay, you can't.
Right. So,
but now we must debate this side debate.
Right. It's sort of like arguing with my buddy Ray in terms of intellect, but if he had a pillowcase of important words. So it sounds like something, but when you distill it down, it's, I didn't tell people that we weren't going to do the concert. I simply told people not to attend and band members not to play.
He's being disingenuous and he knows it.
All right. Well, let's hear it again. We'll take it again. Sorry.
There's plenty of people who are going to go, so that's really not the issue.
It is the issue. You please urge your friends not to attend this concert, and you and Michael Chu and a couple of others will not play at the concert. You urged fellow orchestra members not to play. That shuts down an orchestra. If people listen to your advice, there would be no concert. Is that fair to say?
No, it's if people people who want to vote with their conscience. A lot of perfectly happy
that
if people
means nothing.
Don't
what
have
he
a
just
problem
said meant
playing
nothing.
With you. That's their decision, and that is the difference between my position and what you're imputing in for me to say.
Okay, I don't know what he just said meant. what he said meant nothing. Yeah. It's not even negotiable. Like, there are parts in this discussion where he said, look, let's agree to disagree. It's like, that's like, this isn't a chicken or an egg thing. You sent a letter telling people not to play and not to show up. That's you attempting to stop the concert.
Yeah, just own it.
It's like, very...
Yeah, that's what I was trying to do.
No, he's telling people to vote with their conscience.
Yeah.
Sure is.
It's very, my hand's not in the cookie jar. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. No, it's not. It's just the angle you're standing.
But also, 57-year-old dude, who cares? Just play the stupid thing. But anyway, all right.
And what you're imputing in for me to say.
Okay, I don't know what the difference is. I am a conservative whom you object to. There are conservatives. Guido Lamel is the wonderful man you describe. He obviously, however, does not serve as a spokesman for conservatism.
The professor also took objection to him saying, can a conservative conduct a symphony? And Guido Lamel is a conservative who conducts a symphony. So he said, well, this guy Guido does, but Dennis is basically going to say, but he's not a public conservative. He's a music guy who's conservative, but they're saying he is a public figure.
He doesn't get on the mic.
He's a public figure as conservative, so people know he's conservative, and that's why he's boycotting him. But go ahead, sorry, Gary.
He's a spokesman for music. So to compare the two of us is intellectually dishonest.
All right, so that's how it went. Now, all I could think of, this guy did something interesting. Gary, you can find the clip toward the beginning where Dennis, he's reading a quote where Dennis said, and I'll paraphrase, that he said basically leftism is poisoning the country and it's a cancer and it needs to be rid with chemotherapy. And
I've got that one.
This guy was like, I was frightened. I was fearful. And it's like, first off, do you want this guy teaching your kids? But secondly, do you want a, there's something, all right, play that for a second.
This one's a little longer, but here we go.
So what constitutes and why am I a hateful bigot?
Well, I mean, there's several definitions of bigotry, but the one that applies in this case in Webster-Merriam Dictionary is one who regards or treats members of a group with hatred and intolerance.
You're right, eighth grade term paper.
Okay, so what groups do I treat with hatred and intolerance?
Well, let me start with a group that I've been identified with. I'm not sure, you know, I'm a card-carrying member or anything, but I'm a leftist. In the best sense of the term. I'm part of the loyal opposition of critical thinkers who sometimes challenge the, you know, the dominant news.
Not challenge, try to shut down. It's not challenging, it's shutting down.
Right.
This isn't, not trying to challenge Dennis Prager, you're trying to get him to stay home. That's not challenging a notion. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it's not a notion that he's doing. He's there to conduct. All right, but sorry, keep playing.
Dominant news and the dominant narratives, and I encourage students to think outside the box, and I encourage them to think for themselves and to have the courage of their convictions. Here's what I quote from you. Leftism is a terminal cancer in the American bloodstream and soul. So our first and greatest principle is to destroy this cancer before it destroys us. We therefore see voting for Donald Trump as political chemotherapy. Wow, that's a shocker. Needed to prevent our demise. I'm sorry, I'm a little offended by this for several reasons. Number one, this is a implicitly racialized notion of American civilization because you talk about a bloodstream. It's a metaphor. Of course, it's a metaphor, but metaphors are revealing. And I think your notion of a kind of who we are is you're biologizing it. Secondly, when you
hold on a second,
right.
He's grasping at straws. And if a student turned in a paper with this kind of rhetoric, he'd fail.
And Brian, as somebody who's been through chemo, are you offended?
I actually, now that you mention it, I'm a little offended.
Okay, I thought you might be.
This guy's instructing. He's grasping at straws. This guy's instructing students. Everybody, that's what's scary. But here's the thing that I wanted to drill down on, and I thought this was interesting. And it's I wrote a book called In 50 Years We'll All Be Chicks, and here's something that's happening. You guys tell me if you're picking up on this vibe. I'll tease it. First, I'll tell you, Epics. Get Shorty. I was just watching this. This Sunday, don't miss the new Epic series, Get Shorty. Saw the movie in the theater, 1994, alone, after I dropped my Catholic little brother off at Not Scary Farm. That's how I know that thing must have come out in October, November. October.
Fall of 94, huh?
Yeah, 94. I watched it alone. Very lonely night. Where was I? But good movie. Inspired by Elmore Leonard's best-selling novel and mob boss and the muscle from a Nevada crime family, collide with a washed-up producer in L.A. to make Hollywood's next big hit. Starring Chris O'Dowd, we love him, from Bridesmaids, you know that, and Ray Romano. Oh, it was 95. Yeah, you're right. I had my blue Honda. I wasn't driving my truck. Yeah, still hadn't quite made it yet. check out the first three episodes free now at epics.com. Ray Romano becoming quite the fine actor. It's nice to see him doing these roles. Epics has thousands of the biggest Hollywood hits, comedy specials, documentaries, and critically acclaimed series. So anyway, it premieres Sunday, August 13th, 10 o'clock, 9 central, only on Epics. And again, you can check out the first three episodes free now at epics.com. All right. There's something that's going on. What's going on is men used to say they weren't scared when they were scared. Example, all the stories about, you know, that dude, man, he got out of the car. I got out of my car. It's like, you want some? You want some of that? That guy's scared to death because he's a human being and we're all wired the same way. And 20 years is not going to make a difference in our wiring. But the way you tell the story is the guy got out of the car. I got out of the car. I stood up. I said, you're lucky my kid's in the car. Otherwise, I'd be mopping the pavement with your ass right now. It's not how it went down. The guy probably apologized and offered oral before he slinked back, crawled into his car through the exhaust pipe. It was that's spineless. But
Daddy, what did that man want?
We used to pretend we weren't scared when we were scared. Now we pretend we're scared when we're not scared.
Great observation.
Not sure what's in it for the dude. This professor wasn't threatened, wasn't scared, didn't think. And even then they say, I know it was a metaphor, but I still felt. Well, what do you mean, but you still felt?
It's one or the other. It's the opposite things.
Right. You can't feel alarmed if, in fact, you're aware it's a metaphor. I think we got a little more there, Gary. Sorry.
Describe leftism as a disease, as a cancer that requires chemical solutions, chemical purification.
Oh, if they're going to gas him?
It makes me nervous.
Oh, crap.
And I know you don't mean it that way intentionally.
There you go.
But as anyone who's trained in the interpretation of texts, whether they're sacred texts like the Talmud or poetic texts like the Fleur de Mal of Baudelaire, you understand that statements have levels of meaning. Some of them are hidden, some of them are explicit. And what I hear in this statement is a logic, and I know you don't intend it this way, because my relatives, some of them the French branch, the Blumine, died in the Holocaust. This is the same thinking of, well, these are cockroaches, these are vermin. Let's subject them to a chemical death, a chemical cleansing. Let's get them out of our bloodstream. So that, to me, is probably the most offensive statement of all.
Dennis Prager's an Orthodox Jew.
He wrote many books on Judaism.
He would never.
I wonder if this guy knows that.
He's got to know something. That's the insane part, is everyone knows he's the world's number one Jew. Like Prager, like the hardest part about doing anything with Prager is you can't do it. He doesn't travel on the Sabbath.
You can't
do
Shabbat.
Anything on the Sabbath. Everything's tough. Even you get that Sabbath day in there. Michael, you know, August is a pagan. He'll do, you know, five shows on a Sunday.
He'll travel twice to make up for you.
Yeah. But this guy. So that's what you're dealing with. Also, intellectually, again, you're instructing students. You work at UCLA. You're telling them, I know you didn't mean it that way. I know it was a metaphor, but I felt scared. And this is a kind of like, remember the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon?
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, this guy could get back to the Holocaust in 2.5 moves. You could bring up, here's a topic, coconut flavored soft swirl ice cream.
Well, those coconuts come from Argentina, and you know where the Nazis escaped to.
Yeah, right. 2.5 moves they could get to the oven. Jesus. Goddamn Christ. Again, how do you debate or even have a how do you have an intellectually honest discussion or an adult discussion with this wiring? There's nothing we can do. He doesn't want you playing at the Philharmonic because you're a hate-filled bigot, and good luck talking this brain out of it. All right. Let me take a call. Make my head feel better. When are we going to talk to Prager?
Any moment. That's the message I was trying to send you.
Oh, any minute. Sorry, I just looked down. All right. Well, then why don't we take a quick break right now then? And just, we'll get him on the line.
If you'd like,
come back. Yeah. All right. We'll do that. Talk to him right after that.
Have you heard Spike's Car Radio? It's comedian, actor, writer Spike Ferriston sitting on the porch in Malibu talking with some cool people about cool cars and life in general.
My first guest is Jerry Seinfeld. He's right here. He was all right. Don't try to hug him.
Chris Hardwick.
I could feel everything on the road. I mean, it was basically like, it was like unprotected sex for driving.
Jeremy Piven.
You and Jerry are spiritually tied to cars, and I respect it and I love it, but I don't quite get it yet, but I want to get it.
Download new episodes of Spike's Car Radio every Wednesday on the Podcast One app, or save time and subscribe now at Apple Podcasts or at podcastone.com.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla. You may know him from putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville is bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his newest podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. With his co-host, Elna Baker, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surf 100-foot waves, ride 600 miles per hour in a rocket sled, and wrestle crocodiles just for fun. They've been talking with brave souls who throw caution to the wind and push the boundaries of what humans are capable of. Or, as Johnny would say, they're talking to people who have more balls than a bowling alley. I'm pretty sure I can fly. Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational hold my beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns, literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly right now, early and free, right now on Wondery Plus.
And now, another actual five-star iTunes review of the podcast, read by Adam's buddy, Oswaldo.
I was glad to find your podcast back in the early day. While in Afghanistan, you provided my wee hour the entertainment and distraction during some tense time.
True that. Go to iTunes, rate and review the podcast, and maybe Ozzy will butcher your review too. Now, back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Oh, Dennis Prager's calling in from the road. Dennis? Let's see. Is he potted up? Dennis, can you hear me? We'll see if we can get hold of him. Now, one of the things that I think hurt Dennis's feelings and probably disappointed Dennis is he had that debate with the professor. So, and the orchestra member, he said, you got a beef? Come in and we'll sit down and we'll see if we can hash it out. The guy made his case as to why Dennis was hateful and bigoted. As you heard, I don't think he did a fantastic job taking chemotherapy and saying we brought up blood. Mm-hmm. Blood means race, so thus
you want to purify the
thumbs up to Auschwitz. But okay. But then the New York Times was monitoring the debate and was going to do an article on it the next day. And I think Dennis probably hoped, well, then I'll just be vindicated when they write their article on it. But in the article, it just basically called him a hate monger. So, and it's tough because you do realize that people who, I read the article. Oh, okay, hold on. Dennis Prager?
Yes, sir. Reporting
good,
in.
Good to speak to you. So we just went over the situation. We heard the show. We talked about the Philharmonic. And I think listening to today's show, you're particularly disappointed by your coverage of the New York Times. Yes?
Well, disappointed is a very mild word. It's rare for me. I'm actually angry because they lied about me. And the only thing, it's interesting, I've always said the only thing that bothers me, people can call me everything and they have. It has no impact. But when people impute to me something that I said that I never said, that hurts my credibility with people who don't know me. Names don't matter. But hey, if this guy really said X, he must be an a-hole. And that's what they did when they write. Mr. Prager suggested that same-sex marriage will lead to incest and polygamy. I never said such a thing in my life. And that's why they don't have it in quotes, and they have no URL to click on to see where I said it.
Well, I don't want to make you even more angry, but I must say it's so effective that I read the article today, and I saw Dennis the day before. I consider Dennis a friend. We're collaborating on No Safe Spaces. And I read the article and went, wow, Dennis said that?
That's not the Dennis I know.
Because it was just in print in the New York Times, and I assumed there was more before it and more after it, but I did assume you said it, and I remember reading it going, oh, that's kind of tough, Dennis.
Right. That's what they do. And for everything that they wrote, there's a perfectly benign explanation, just as I did with the professor who called me a hateful bigot. That is the genius of the New York Times and the elite left-wing press. They do a hatchet job while sounding completely normal.
Right. So I think you were looking forward to something fair and reasonable as far as a depiction of
actually, no, to be honest, I wasn't. I said on the air today, every day that I wasn't reported in the New York Times, I considered a blessing.
That's a good point. So you're gonna go on and you're gonna conduct November. No, it's not Wednesday, November, is it?
No, August. Next Wednesday, August 16th.
Yeah, we're going to be, and I'm going to be out of town, otherwise I would happily go. But we are going to, I can't play the fiddle, but I will sit in for that professor, and you'll love it.
He can play the jug.
Yeah. We will be in Brooklyn, King's Theater. That's, November 29th. You are going to be playing, conducting next week. And as far as we know, everything is still on. Is that correct?
Well, this is a perfect example. There are 60 to 70 musicians in the orchestra. About seven are not coming. So what do they report? The entire article is about the seven, not about the 70 or the 60 that are coming. See, that's the way they do it. It's genius. These people are thrilled I'm coming. There are people who volunteer to play because I'm conducting from the Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra.
Why is it, and you guys have never really felt the sting of this, it's a frustration of somebody writing something that isn't about you and making you seem like either, in my case, I remember when I did the Man Show and Entertainment Weekly said that Comedy Central performed a Corollectomy instead of multiple lunches throwing money at me, begging me to stay for a fifth season. It's the most frustrating thing in the world because you realize everyone who reads this just thinks Comedy Central doesn't like Adam and got rid of him, and Dennis Prager's a bigot, and that the most of the Philharmonic has decided not to play and agreed with this guy.
That's right.
It's insanely frustrating, but it's also when you were talking to the professor about turning it political, and he was accusing you of turning it political in response to his boycott, which was politically motivated. What is that? Do you believe he believes what he's saying? This is my biggest question, because these people are old enough, they're educated enough, and they're saying they're making points that my son has abandoned because he's 11 now. Do you think
Your analysis was so unfortunately spot on. It was painful. You and I asked the same questions. And my answer is actually depressing. I think they do believe it. I think that when the left says that Dennis Prager is a racist or a bigot or you, whatever they call you, I think they do believe it, which is why they're more frightening. I actually find people who believe their lies to be much more dangerous than people who know their lie. There's a chance to get through to people who know they're lying. There's no chance to get through to people who don't know they're lying.
Well, also, this doesn't happen to you as much as it happens to me, because you can sort of trade in intellectual bona fides with anybody, but I don't have a proper education. So for me, he's just the professor, and I'm just the construction worker. Sounds like the world's worst kids book.
Maybe I don't quite think that people see it that way. Anyway, he could dismiss me equally. He could say, he has a PhD and I left graduate school after 2 years. So, what I think about education anyway. I think part of the reason you are so intelligent and think so clearly is that you didn't go to college. And I swear I'm not being facetious. Wow. I actually do believe it has a bad effect on the ability to think on most people who go to college.
Well, I will say this. I didn't go to college, and instead I got a job building things all day, every day. So I understood the super tangible world of, I would have people say to me, and there's a sort of political version of this, but I'd have people go, I don't want to post in the middle of the room. And I'd go, well, if you don't want to post in the middle of the room, then we're going to have to put in a big piece of steel and it's going to cost a lot of money. And they go, I don't want to spend that money. And I'd go, well, then you're going to get a post in the middle of the room. And they'd go, why can't we have a post in the middle of the room? And I go, because it's holding up the second floor. So these are the two choices. And they couldn't I couldn't live in a world where I got to walk away and go, I just feel like I'd like to live in a world with no posts. Wouldn't work. I just
exactly.
I just had to.
That's right.
I had a world. My world was we either leave the post or we start tearing open the ceiling and passing a piece of steel in there, and it's going to cost a lot of money. It's going to be a big hassle, but you will have no post.
Right. Okay. So here is my way of putting exactly what you said. For academics, there are no consequences to their bad ideas. To every non-academic, the rest of us, there are major consequences to bad ideas.
Right. Right.
If you have a bad idea as a professor, you get published.
Wait, there? I feel like there's a dot, dot, dot.
Just walking into the house.
Dennis, you there?
No, I'm right here. Okay. No, I've been here the
I'm
whole
sorry.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah, you get published. If I have a bad idea, the roof caves in on me.
That's right. You're not. You are punished for a bad idea. They are not punished and often rewarded.
Yeah, it's kind of like a politician in the sense that in the private sector, if you run a small business and you make a lot of bad decisions, you're just going to be out of a gig.
Yep.
If you make it as a politician, depending on where you are, you may get reelected. You know, Maxine Waters has been making bad decisions for 40 years. Dennis.
Yes.
Okay, just wanted to make sure we had you. I know it's been a long and trying day. You sent a letter to the New York Times with some retractions or corrections, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And do you assume that they'll ever publish that?
I don't assume that they will, but I am also going to contact them about putting in a correction. And if that doesn't work, I will contemplate legal recourse. And certainly my next column, my next nationally syndicated column, will be to use this article in the Times, analyze it, and show people how they report conservatives. It's very, very important. I'm sort of a sacrificial lamb in this instance. As a perfect case example of the way they do things. Look, you know me. You read it and go, really? 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 I read it and I went, really, really, really. I sounded bad to me.
Sure. I guess what I'm saying and what Dennis is saying is he had a debate. There's an issue. We'd like the nuts and the bolts of the issue. We'd like to hear both sides. And then you guys had a very civil conversation yesterday about you being ironically a bigot. And I think you came out on top because you had the evidence on your side. It'd be nice if you could count on the New York Times to simply just relate what had happened. But you can't do it because one guy's the professor at UCLA and the other guy's conservative and he's religious. So we, New York Times, can't just say what is. We have to put our flavor on it.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like you have an editorial page for that, but you're not in the business of putting flavor on just what is. These are just stories, no different than an earthquake in El Salvador. Like, here's how many people died. Here's the magnitude. Here's what happened. As a reader, I assume the readers would like to know what happened, not here's my version of what happened. Here's what we would have liked to have heard.
The problem is the readers think that is what happened. They really think that the 1 out of 10 members of that orchestra who are boycotting me are doing the right thing, because after all, look at how bad a person I am. You know, so you have to wonder then, what does it say about the conductor for inviting me? What does it say about the board of directors of the Santa Monica? Remember, Santa Monica. This is not Jackson, Mississippi. The Santa Monica Symphony Orchestra. Why would the board unanimously affirm the invitation if I'm that bad a human being? It's never addressed. By the way, I spoke to the conductor. The conductor said that I spoke to the reporter a half hour. The whole time I told him what a terrific conductor, musician, and person you are, and all they said was Guido Lamel, the conductor, said that yes. Look, I also find some of his positions objectionable. And he said, I swear to you, I never use the word objectionable. By the way, that is the reason I said to him, he wouldn't know this. He doesn't do this like I do. I do interviews all the time. I never do it by phone. I never do it in person. I only do it by email, so that every word is my word and chosen carefully.
Very interesting. Dennis, again, Dennis and I will be on stage over at the King's Theater in Brooklyn. That's in New York. That's November 29th. And this is now this coming Wednesday. As you hear this, it'll be a week from today, right? Yeah, and that'll be some tickets still available. I imagine after all this, now you're going to go clean, right? You're going to sell out, right?
Well, I hope so. I know that it's doing very well. I'm sure there are seats. Interestingly, the told me the most expensive seats already sold out. So, which is good for people who want to go now. Those are the ones that are left are the less expensive. But that's such a great hall; it doesn't matter where you sit.
I like
anyway. People should go to, you know, they could go to DennisPrager.com and Where's Dennis and get, you know, or just go Santa Monica Symphony Orchestra. But it going to this now is a statement of support for me. I admit it. By the way, I'm not getting paid for this. I just want people to understand that. This is a purely altruistic gesture and a joy for me because I love music. But I like supporting local orchestras. I raise money for them because I have a big following. So this is really the most amazing is I thought, isn't it beautiful? The most left-wing city in Southern California, I will help them raise unprecedented amounts of money. It shows that at least on music we could unite, and look what happened.
Well, Councilman Kevin McCown will not be attending the concert either.
The former mayor.
He will not be attending. That's
right, because I'm a hateful bigot.
Right, right. Although I bet you I could pull 1,000 interviews where he just said, hey, it's time for the right and the left to come together, to have an honest conversation, to talk.
But
we're not the enemy.
Yeah,
we're all Americans. We're Americans first. We have disagreements. We should be able to discuss those. I bet you I could pull 1,000 quotes of him saying that.
.. as long as no one has a violin in their hand.
Right. All right, Dennis. We'll see you soon. I'll be bringing Sonny by this afternoon so you can teach him how to tie a Windsor.
I could teach Sonny how to tie a Windsor, how to tie a one turn, and how to tie no turn. I
wow.
am a tie
what?
Maven.
All right. He's coming by.
And by the way, he's a great kid.
I love that kid. Thank you, Dennis Prager.
Thank you, Adam Carolla.
All right. Yeah, it's got to be Gary. You can probably find the Times article and dig it up.
I've got it here.
It was like, okay, well, now they're going to report, and they're going to say Dennis is fine, and moving on to the concert. But then the Times was like, I don't know, you probably highlight, all right, why don't you give us 5 lowlights, and then we'll do it. And yeah, it's so true. You talk to the conductor, invited you on the show. You do a half-hour interview with him. He says Dennis is a great guy, I know him personally. It'll be happy to have him. And at some point, you can say, I disagree with a lot of his policies, but I think he's a great guy. And then they'll just print the part where the guy who invited you on. But again, it's bad reporting because why does the guy who invited you on, when you read the article, it's like, hey, we interviewed the conductor. What'd he say? He says he disagrees with many of Dennis's positions. Oh, well, that's all you say about this guy. Why are you inviting him in to come conduct? You have to say, he's a great guy. He loves music. I love music. We think it's great. I don't agree with everything, but I love the man.
That's the full picture.
Right.
Right. Now, you have a choice then when you're writing an article. Do we include that part? Do we include the part where you say you disagree with his points? Or do we include both parts? If you include just a part where you think he's a great guy, then you are writing for Breitbart. And if you include the part, both parts, then you're being intellectually honest. Mm-hmm. You're going, he's a good guy. I don't agree with everything he says, but I like him and we wanted to bring him in. That's fine. And if you just do the part where you say, I disagree with his things, then you're writing for the New York Times. Mm-hmm. Those are the two. That's how you know. The in-between is little sugar, little salt.
And I wonder if they did do some sort of correction or retraction, would that get the same font size as the original headline?
I don't think it ever.
Grab a magnifying glass.
It never does. Gary, you can find. Oh, we got to talk about the coffee can fart story here.
Well, how do you know? We're shifting gears.
Yeah, I know, big time. Hey, Sean, 31, Buffalo.
Hey, how's it going, Ace Man? Gina, Paul?
Good man.
Mm-hmm. So I think I could top it, but to be fair, I think it's in a different class. Yours was naturally aspirated, and mine's forced induction.
Okay, let me explain. First off, naturally aspirated is just a regular car engine, and forced induction is either a turbocharger or a blower.
All right.
Okay.
Sucks the air in.
Yeah, something that's forcing, something that's working on it. Now, the reason, and I should do a quick synopsis on the Jimmy Kimmel coffee can story that most, if some people, new listeners, don't know what it is. I'll tell it 1 second. First, I'll tell you about True Car. Oh, forced induction. Naturally aspirated. Shopping for a car, make sure you're getting a real price on actual inventory. People configure cars online only to find out they're not available. True Car, real pricing on actual inventory. Not pricing offered by True Car, but pricing from an actual True Car certified dealer. Over 3 million cars sold by over 13,000 True Car certified dealers nationwide. So, if you're buying new or you're buying used and you want to save an average off of $3,000 off of MSRP, you would go with True Car. You do what our own Chris Maxpata did. He got himself a Prius Smart, 200 miles on it, like almost brand new, but not quite. Again, new, used, you visit True Car, you see what other people are paying for the exact same car, apples to apples, you enjoy a more confident buying experience. It is True Car. Jimmy and I had a poker night at my house a million years ago. When we were done, we were left behind like an old gay couple, just sort of cleaning up the salsa and the chips and the cigars and everything. Jimmy was standing at the sink. The house I had a weird corner sink. The kitchen was a corner sink. So he was standing in the corner with his back to me. He was doing the dishes. And I had a big fart lined up because we're, you know, eating nachos and drinking beers and stuff like that. And I saw to the side the Trader Joe canister of coffee, whole beans. I used to take the whole bean, and it's a canister that's it's 5 inches around and 12 inches tall, and I'd be the whole bean, and I'd grind it up and make the coffee fresh that way. There were 3 or 4 beans floating around the bottom of this canister, and so I popped the lid off. I put it on my ass. I gave it half a turn to get the lock on. I filled it with gas. I popped the cap back on real quick. And I tapped Jimmy on the shoulder and I said, have you ever smelled fresh roasted whole bean Sumatran coffee or whatever? And he went, it popped the lid off. And again, this is, it's diabolical because you don't do, if you say to people, smell my finger, they don't do that.
Consciously.
Right. If you go like, hey, you think this tapioca is good? It's very sheepish. Mm-hmm. They'll smell everything very sheepishly, like milk or whatever, and if you go, take a sip of this or smell it. When you take that coffee canister from Trader Joe's and you pop the lid and you can hear a few beans floating around at the bottom, you just bury your face. You just buried it in there. He was like trying to pull the bean off of the bottom of the can with his nose, you know? And then he just pulled his head back and he had this great moment of confusion. Like, what the hell? Because it takes your brain a second to process just what it was
inhaling,
what it just was hit with. And that's the beauty of that coffee can fart, because again, you can fart up a room, you can fart up a car, but the guy like rolled the window down or put a shirt over his face, or you can't get him to suck it up. All right, let's see. Where were we?
Sean.
Sorry, Sean. There we are. Sean, where were we? Sean?
So you're limited to how much air your nose can suck in, and I agree that the coffee is the best one because that's nobody's afraid to smell coffee. So I worked at a body shop, and we used to spray Linex,
mm-hmm.
and the
that's the bed liner.
Yes, rhino lining Linex, same thing. the isocyanate mixture is so strong that you can't use a charcoal respirator, like when you're spraying a car, for example, like painting a car.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to use, it's essentially like a grinding mask with a seal for your face, mm-hmm. and then you wear this little belt, and it's hooked to an air hose to a yep. pancake compressor that's outside.
Right.
And so my buddy was spraying.
You're being forced, right. Mm-hmm. It's not a filtering the ambient air, it's being pumped in fresh.
Right.
Right.
And the seal just prevents stuff from going up under the mask, but right. it forces air past your face right. and out.
Right.
So my buddy was inside spraying, and I farted into the pancake compressor, and I had enough time to run over to the window and watch him, and there was about a 15-second delay,
mm-hmm.
and then I saw him flailing, throw the gun, and start to run away, but the thing is, he was hooked to the belt with the filter on it, and he clotheslined himself, and... as he was running away, and then ended up vomiting.
Oh my God.
That's good. That's good. I like this. You guys know what a pancake compressor is?
No, but I assume it's the only way in for the air.
It's an air compressor that's flat. Looks like a space saucer. It's the shape. It's called a pancake because it's the shape of the air compressor. But I don't know how you would fart into a pancake air compressor. Sorry, Sean.
Well, there's a little thing on the top where it sucks air in to be compressed.
Yeah.
So I just lined my anus up with that.
I think it's good. I'd like to test that.
The part where it's clipped to when he's running away.
That's good. Does it have a little...
that's pretty good.
Does the intake have a little foam filter, though?
Oh, yeah. I removed that. Oh, yeah.
Oh, you did?
Open air intake on this one.
You opened it. You removed the little foam intake. And you got your ass as close as you could to the intake.
Oh. In Final Destination, it would suck his innards in.
This is good. All right. That's good. I stand by. See, I understand. It's a little murky because it's not a straight line. It's just sucking in mm-hmm. air, and it has a little filter. You'd have to like kind of put your ass against it, and it would be good. It would still get other air in. But that's solid.
You believe him.
Yeah. I know. I know everything that he's saying, and it makes perfect sense, except for the ass air would be a little diluted. It wasn't straight, unstepped on Bolivian shale like I had Kimmel pick up his nose.
It's compressed. It's compressed. There's more ass per square per psi. You know.
Yeah, you should work I don't know who makes those things. DeWalt. Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Sean.
I think I should work for SpaceX, man. I think I've overshot my genius.
Thank you, Sean. All right, we got the news here. I got a couple more phone calls. Let's blow. This guy's been on hold for a million years, so let's talk to Kyle, 29, Florida. Girlfriend received $15,000 for being an accident in Uber. How should they spend it? Yeah?
Well, then, all right, so at the same time, I just got a text while I was on the phone saying some blood-sucking cunt at work told her to go see a lawyer. So I'm not sure. I don't want her to see a lawyer because it's only a few dollars in damage, and now, you know, it's pretty much like 1,000 times the amount of damage that she's getting back.
That didn't make any sense.
I'm confused. I just know that you don't like the lawyer.
How often do you have $15,000 to your name, Kyle?
No, sir.
All right. Well, I will say this. I know it's not about you. You love your girl. My buddy Chris was intentionally run over on PCH. And
intentionally?
Yes.
Blood Alley over there in Malibu?
He got into a fight with a guy on PCH. He beat up the guy on PCH. The guy went back to his VW Bug, and then he ran over. He didn't run him over, but he hit him with his VW Bug.
God.
Yeah. So Chris ended up in the hospital with like a ruptured spleen, like internal bleeding, a broken arm, a whole bunch of other stuff. Anyone else would be dead, but he was fine. At some point from the insurance company, he got a check for like $11,000. And I remember saying to him, you'll never see any more money than this. You'll never see any more money than this. Like, you got to buy something. You got to do something. And I remember at the time, that's why they called me Walt. I said, get books and tools. Get tools. Get tools. We need tools. You need tools. You got to have tools. It'll never be able to take that away. I said books and tools. I don't know why. He went to Maui for 6 months, hung out at strip clubs, and came home with no money. That's just literally just went
6 months.
Went to Maui, maybe for 2 months, but he just went to Maui for X amount of months, spent it all, and came back, and we all went right back to work. And we could have worked at that point with real estate in the San Fernando Valley, $135, $150 for a house in the valley. That could have covered the down payment, and then we could all moved in as carpenters and worked on the house and fix it up, and that house would be worth $1.4 today. No, sorry, Bob Dixie. I'm going to Maui.
Going to Maui.
I'm getting high. Yep. All right. I would say books and tools. Same thing I told my buddy Chris.
And 2 Corolla Cruise tickets.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Gary, I think there's a picture of that in one of my books where you can see him on the kitchen table, like holding up the check. It's like $11,000.
Like you want a game show?
Is it a comically large foam check?
He got issued to him. He was out of the hospital. I remember just thinking, he's the luckiest guy I know. He got ran over and he got a whole $11,000 for it. Brad, 50, Minneapolis.
Hey, Adam.
Hey.
Get it on.
What's going on, man?
Brian, Gina. Hey, I just had something happen you will not believe. This is another example of how we have lost our minds. So I was at a public pool a week ago with my daughter, 7-year-old, and my wife. They went up to the top of a big water slide that empties out into a 4-foot area in the pool, and I'm standing off to the side in the middle of the pool, about 2-foot area with my GoPro, waiting for them to come down and just sort of film them. The lifeguard starts blowing her whistle, and I'm looking around to see what's going on, see what kid is, being a hooligan. And I finally lock eyes with her, and she's like, "Hey, no filming in the pool."
Oh, I'm yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah.
She's like, "No, you can't film in the pool." I'm like, "Why?" "Because of all the creeps."
Yeah.
creeps don't like it.
I got to believe the cock.
The creeps complain.
Yeah.
I gotta believe the cock camera mount was probably not a great idea, hindsight being 2020. Next time, go with the handheld.
Yeah, go with the handheld. Yeah.
I know you wanted your hands free to catch your daughter in that great POV.
Yeah. However. So I go and I talk to the main lifeguard, who's like 16 years old, and I'm like, what's the deal here? He's like, "Well, yeah, we've had some complaints, blah, blah, blah." I'm like, really? What's next? No mirrored sunglasses? Yeah,
There's nothing we're going to be able to do anymore, because it's my somebody threw a beer bottle at the ump and everyone's drinking out of a foam cup now at the ballpark, all 46,000 people, because one guy, my thing is like, let's go find that one guy and do something bad to him. Let's not have everybody not be able to. On the other hand, you should be reprimanded anytime you go to a public pool and you're over the age of 37 and a half.
And you want to capture images.
No. Just reprimanded.
Okay.
Because you should be incentivized to get a pool your own.
Private.
When you're 50, by the time you're 50, you're supposed to have your own pool. Oh. That's the deal.
Also, this is a very sad thing that they have to have that rule and make that declaration. But about a year after the iPhone came out, I remember seeing signs in the gym locker room, please don't have your phone out, because people are taking pictures.
Well, that happened to former Playboy playmate, Danny Mathers.
This is not. Look how far we've come. This is just another sad. As soon as a new technology comes around, it'll be used for evil.
Yeah, she photographed somebody.
A naked
didn't look
woman and made fun of her and allegedly thought she was sending it to her friend, but she posted it and it was not private.
Oh, she thought she was sending it to her friend.
I think so. And with the caption, "If I can't unsee this, neither can you," but it was posted publicly. And they were, not only did they take legal action, but there was a possible prison sentence.
Well, for a hot dead behind bars, finally. Like, I've seen so many depictions of it, but I've never actually. When I see those real
movies,
locked up movies, when I see real TV shows about it, they're never that chick.
No.
Now, real Chained Heat.
Chained Heat.
That's a good movie.
Chained Heat does it up for reals.
For reals. Okay, this is a perfect example. I'm going to, Gary, you got to see whether she made a mistake or not on this, the playmate having it go public versus her friend, because I will
give her argument anyway.
I will have thoughts.
I believe that was
this.
Her defense.
Okay, hold on 1 second. I'll tell you about Geico, man. You got the to-do list, like not being incarcerated. That's on the top of my list. Pick up the dry cleaning, drop off the dog, pick up the milk, whatever. How about you save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance and you don't have to do anything at all? Just go to geico.com. 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Get that extra money, man. It is Geico. Geico.com. Spend a couple minutes. See just how much you could save at Geico.com. Perfect example of the news. I saw the story and heard the story multiple times, like we all did when this story sort of hit the news about a year or two ago, a year and a half ago or something. And I was like, ugh, what a horrible person. Like, what? And then always this, like a little confusion. Like, you're going to take a picture of a naked person at your 24-hour fitness and post it online and not expect any kind of backlash or reprimand or law trouble? Like, who's this? Who's this naive that they would take a picture of a nude person that's a member of their gym? It's so traceable and it's so easy and they'd know and that person may see it. Like, what an A, what are you going to look like in society's eyes? And then B, you're going to get arrested, girl. Like, what are you thinking? But if you took that picture and if you thought, if I took a picture and I thought I was just sending it to Jimmy to get a laugh out of him and screwed up the technology, which I think everyone has one of those stories where they didn't know, they'd CC'd everybody. They thought that they were sending a direct message, but they weren't. And everyone has one of those stories. If that's when you did, then I don't have any interest in you. I don't like you taking the picture, and I would like you reprimanded to some degree for you don't take pictures of strange people naked. But if you thought you were just screwing around with your friend, you don't need the ire of society. You don't need society going, what a horrible person you are. Because as long as it's between you and your buddy, then that's just a joke. And this is a very good example. Is this person a good person? Is this person a bad person? Well, in the context of she took a picture of a naked woman who was out of shape, put it up on social media and said, oh, I wish I could unsee this. That's a horrible person. I really don't like that person. It's a cruel person. It's like, I like jokes. I like practical jokes. I like making fun at other people's expense and my own and everything else, but I don't like being cruel to people. Yeah. And that feels very mean and cruel to somebody. But if you are sharing it with one of your girlfriends to try to get a rise out of your girlfriend, then that's a completely different thing. And I look at you in a completely different way.
Well, and also, doesn't it in that sense make more sense to you when you're thinking like, huh, why would someone do that?
But well, now it snaps into but focus. When the news tells the story, what side, which depiction do they want to give? Mm-hmm. Because my depiction makes us go, that was probably ill-conceived, but I guess it could have happened to anybody. Their version is, oh my God, what a horrible person. I hate that person. She's so beautiful and she thinks everyone should be beautiful, but nobody is as beautiful as her. And she thinks that. And I just watched it. I was like, oh, what a horrible person. But now this version, and you kind of go, oh, I guess it has been put through the filter of the news. And the news is interested in taking us. If your job is to take a bunch of twos and threes and make them nines and tens, this is how you do it. That story in my mind went from, oh my God, that's a horrible person, to okay, moving on. Yeah. Like, who cares? Well, all right.
In her defense, I don't know how Snapchat works either. Natalia tried to teach me for 45 minutes.
Do you have, Gary, did you get that, just put a button on the Prager thing. Did you have the article with the lowlights in it? Gina has.
Yeah, I'm
all right.
It.
Well, let's hear some of the New York Times lowlights.
All right. I'll just start reading paragraphs. You tell me when you've had enough. So it was supposed to be a dazzling opportunity for the Santa Monica Symphony Orchestra, a volunteer ensemble of professional and semi-professional musicians led by Guido Lamel, to play the prestigious Walt Disney Concert Hall in Los Angeles for a fundraiser. Mr. Lamel, music director of the orchestra, invited the conservative talk show host and columnist Dennis Prager as guest conductor for the event. But that decision caused immediate outrage among some members of the symphony, and a number of them are refusing to play the fundraiser, saying that allowing the orchestra to be conducted by Mr. Prager, who has suggested that same-sex marriage would lead to polygamy and incest, among other contentious statements, would be tantamount to endorsing and normalizing bigotry. Some are even encouraging others not to attend the concert. Now here's a quote. Dennis Prager is a right-wing radio host who promotes horribly bigoted positions, read an open letter circulated among the musicians. Blah, blah, blah. The letter written by Andrew Apter and Michael Chui, two University of California, Los Angeles professors who are violinists in the orchestra, went on. Prager is not a trained conductor, and there is no musical rationale for his participation. Please urge your friends to not attend this concert.
First off, the musical rationale is you guys want to raise money, and he likes conducting.
Right.
Yeah, we can make this happen.
Right. No. There's no – he's – first off, Oh God, I'm gonna think of the perfect person, and then you guys are gonna laugh. All right. All right, let's see. Mariah Carey is not a professional baseball player. There's no rationale for her throwing out the first pitch at the Mets game. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the point. You get people who aren't that to throw out the first pitch or conduct or do what have you to bring attention as a sort of a goof. He didn't say he's going to replace the conductor. So it's going to be one job. Night.
Did Mariah Carey come to mind because she had the worst first pitch of all time?
It did.
Have you ever seen it, Gina?
No.
Oh, it's semi-legendary. You can keep reading, and okay. Gary's
keep reading.
Fine.
I can
find
a couple other. I think you'll be particularly stirred by this paragraph. Zach Ziskowski, 29 years old, a freelance TV producer who's been a violinist for the orchestra for 5 years, said, quote, being a gay person who has been discriminated against, I don't want to perform with somebody who has written some pretty awful things about gay people, women, and minorities. He added that he found it impossible to separate Mr. Prager's politics from the man, and that he knew about five other musicians who were declining to play. Another official, a councilman, Kevin McKeon, told the Santa Monica Daily Press, quote, I personally will most certainly not be attending a concert featuring a bigoted hate monger. The judgment or lack of shown in inviting Prager may affect future community support for the symphony whose concerts I have attended in the past.
I don't think I could call somebody a bigoted hate monger with a straight face unless I had some real, like a nice body count, like something that was nice
you'd
and tangible.
You'd have to like be convicted.
I just mean these are 60-year-old college educated folks that are just calling bigoted hate monger. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. Mm-hmm. I maybe disagree with Dennis, and I don't know if they believe it or, by the way, if they do, their definition of bigoted hate monger is so insanely loose that it would cover almost everybody. And why do we have to conform to their view of the world? Like, they just have this view of the world, and everyone, well, you don't get to play then if you don't think like I think. And the way you think is a little bit kooky. Like, if it was a little closer to the center, I think maybe we could abide by some of this. But you heard the professor and his arguments. Those are the rules you have to play by. You go to UCLA, those are your rules. And you have to pass through his cheesecloth in order to make it through his filter to the other side. So when guys like that, when guys like the UCLA professor say, look, we're all for free speech. We want free speech. This campus was built on a bedrock of free speech. But we don't like hate speech, and we won't tolerate that. So that professor will just decide, and then he'll render a decision, and then we'll figure out who gets to speak on college campuses. They literally think that's the way it works. That is basically, I will have the world's biggest Dodgers fan behind home plate calling balls and strikes for the World Series. Dodgers play the Yankees. Mm-hmm. And don't worry. He'll call him
how
he sees
him. Sam.
So this guy who takes this chemotherapy reference and goes right back to the Holocaust with it, that guy's all for free speech, is a huge endorser of free speech, wants nothing more than free speech, but doesn't like it when it crosses the line, and guess who's going to interpret where the line is?
Right. I think to any reasonable person who heard the professor, they were pretty specious arguments.
Also, guess what's not free speech? You deciding where the line is for free speech on your super delicate, fluffy, wimpy, alarmist sensibilities, you, my friend, are not a very good canary for this free speech coal mine. We're trying to get some. I'd rather just find somebody. Let Mike Rowe decide free speech. And then, you know what? I'll be down with it. All right. I'm going to tell you guys about LifeLock. Free Wi-Fi, free speech. It all comes with a price. Convenient when you're on the go, but free isn't always safe. 92% of Americans put their personal info at risk when they use the public Wi-Fi. Somebody's identity is stolen every 2 seconds in ways you may not detect if you're only monitoring your credit. Thieves could sell your information to the dark web. Or get an online payday loan in your name, and once that credit goes south, you can never get it back. Now, LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats. If there's a problem, their U.S.-based identity restoration specialist will work to fix it. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all business, but LifeLock is the industry standard. I have it. Kids have it. Wife has it. I think Philly Cheesesteak has it. I suggest you get it, man. You're shopping online. Let's protect that identity. It's LifeLock. Dawson.
Act now and get the added protection of Norton Security free for the first year when you bundle Norton and LifeLock memberships. Plus, for a limited time, you'll also get a special 15% discount off the first year of your LifeLock membership. Call 1-800-LifeLock or go to LifeLock.com and use promo code Adam15. That's Adam15 to save 15% today. Terms apply.
All right. Not Taco Bell material. The one-man show. Me, September 23rd, Chicago, Park West. Always love that place. October 13th, that is Minneapolis Music Hall. Saturday, October 14th, Nashville Polk Theater. Come on out, hang out, take some pictures at the end, watch the Stone Pelican, eat your free offerings. People bring him pie and food, he just eats it in line.
Are you done with deviled eggs, or are you still accepting those?
I will go for deviled eggs.
You'll never be done.
But
well,
I do
don't
not.
Don't put your own spin on
no,
it.
No highfalutin deviled yeah. eggs, just regular deviled eggs. Also, you can go to Chassis, Chassy, and see all the new offerings over there. I've got lots of stuff. Building a nice website. Just go to AdamCarolla.com and check that out. And me and Prager are on sale right now. And where are we? New York. Oh, yeah. Brooklyn. All right. So, until next time, Adam Carolla, Gina Grant, Dennis Prager, and Paul Bryan say mahalo.
Same-sex marriage will lead to incest and polygamy.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. And be sure to give him a thumbs up on Facebook. Gina Grad is on the radio at 100.3 The Sound in L.A. That's weekday mornings. Chicago Park West, September 3rd. Music Hall in Minneapolis, October 13th. Nashville's James K. Polk Theater on October 14th. Get your tickets. Plus tickets to the Carolla Cruise this November. Books, movies, and more at AdamCarolla.com.